absolute pleasure to have Mitch Poole join us. Mitch, good morning.
Thanks, Steve. It's a pleasure.
Did you, obviously you watched the game last night, right? Or did you just tune in for the late stages?
Yeah, I had people texting me saying, hey, it's around the sixth inning, the A's are up 4-3. So I thought, well, you know what, I'm going to chime in about 20 minutes or so, and then I started watching it from there. I started, you know, knowing at what part of the game I was getting him ready, so.
Well, let's set the stage and explain this, and we'll talk about your association on the racetrack in a minute. But you know, how old were you at the time, and how did you originally sign on as with the Dodgers?
Well, I was 24 at the time, but I started at 21 years old. I was at Pasadena City College on their baseball team, and one of my buddies was a bat boy for the Dodgers, but he never really got anything from me. Like, hey, it'd be great if, you know, I try to get a job over there or whatever. But as time went on, during 1985, he said, hey, you never asked me about coming in and working. All the other guys, they do, but... I go, well, I saw the look on your face when people constantly ask you, so I wasn't going to do that. But he goes, well, why don't you come and unload the truck tomorrow? It's coming in from Houston via LAX, but we got to unload the truck because we have opening day here. And ended up his boss, David Wright, after we were done unpacking, and said, hey, you think you might want to come tomorrow and dress out and, you know, maybe go down the line and warm up the outfielders and stuff. And I go, yeah, I'll be there. So I ended up doing that. And I had known John Scott, the guy that was the bat boy there before, for many years. We played on traveling teams, and we ended up at Pasadena City together. But that's how it got started.
Unbelievable. And so a couple of years later, you're now basically one of the clubhouse attendants.
Yeah, I 4 years. This 1988 was my last year as bat boy, and a great year to go out on. But I was kind of working in and out of the clubhouse, dressing out and giving another guy a chance to go out there. So my chance right there was not getting dressed. And I just happened to be around, and that's why my involvement with Kirk at the time.
Unbelievable. And of course, Gibson comes into the World Series, and you know, at the time, I can recall it was the Mets, right? I mean, the Mets had been the National League had been really a terror all year, right? And the Dodgers put them away.
Yeah, I believe that the Mets had beat the Dodgers 11 times and lost one during the regular season. So that goes to show you how that team was.
So you, World Series getting started, and at Dodger Stadium, Gibson was, I mean, hobbled, completely hobbled. And talk about what was going on going into Game 1.
Yeah, well, just before Game 1 was they had a team workout. The Dodgers had a team workout later in the day at Dodger Stadium, but I actually came in. It was probably, I don't know, probably about 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And I'm walking through the bottom, not the loge, but the field area, looking out on the field as I'm walking toward the home plate area to go downstairs. And I look out to the left, and I see all these guys stretching with gold and green on, and I'm like, oh my God, we don't have a chance, because these guys are monsters, you know. But that was the first part of that. Then leading up to Game 1, it was probably around the 6th, 7th inning, and I happened to be picking up towels in the training room, and Kirk was getting his knee iced on the training table, and so I was picking up towels and Vince Scully came over the air and said, you know, we're going to be without the services of Kirk Gibson. And right then it incensed him, and he said, Mitch, go get my uniform. And so I did. He got dressed and got himself up and walking. I just followed him. I just wanted to see what was going on. And he goes, hey, can you go and go get some baseballs and go down to the little cage net area, because I need to hit off a tee and a couple other things. And so, okay. So we went down there, and I was actually sitting on the bucket of balls, and you had the hitting coach, Ben Hines, walk by, and we were losing at the time 4-3, and he probably wasn't real excited or anything, but Kirk kind of was. He goes, hey, Ben, can you help me out? And Ben goes, why don't you get Mitch to help you out? And so that's basically how I got into that.
Part of the story, and I really had not remembered, you know, how things had unfolded behind the scenes, and there was plenty of reporting about it, but the story in USA Today yesterday really kind of detailed it, and you couldn't go into the dugout itself, but you needed to communicate to Lasorda that Gibson wanted to play, and Gibson was available to pinch hit.
Right. Well, what had happened is, while I was sitting there, I started placing a baseball on a tee in the location that they felt the backdoor slider would come into. And after a while, Kirk goes, you know, hey, can you give me a little bit of motion, because I'm not going to see a ball just sitting there for me. So can you throw it into that area? And so I go, okay. So we started doing that. And then he stopped and he goes, hey, Mitch, this could be the script, just like that. I'll never, ever forget those words. It's just the way he put it was, you knew what he was talking about. So then I walked down the ramp all the way to the dugout, because he told me, hey, go get Tommy. Tell him I can hit. And so I'm down at the bottom of the dugout, right at the very end, at the base of the ramp. Tommy's at the very end where the bat rack is. And I yelled at him, and everybody's looking at me like, what are you doing? And I go, man, I'm going to really have to yell at. So I screamed at Tommy, and he came running over and says, what do you want? He goes, can't you see we're trying to play a game out here? And I go, Tommy, Gibby's up there, and he's telling me to come and get you because he thinks he can hit. And it just changed his whole attitude, and he just waddled his way to the top of the ramp. And they had a little talk, and Gibby was telling him what scenario can happen. And they're like, you know, somebody gets on, he wants to hit. And so that's what happened.
Unbelievable. We're going to, as soon as Deja lets me know I've got both of the calls, and the drama involved in this, every time you watch it, and we're just going to hear the snippet calls from Scully and from Jack Buck, but there was tremendous tension, and there's a 4-minute, the whole at-bat actually is available, and with Vin Scully's commentary, and it includes some graphics that really enhance the whole story, because Eckersley hadn't given up a home run since mid-August.
Right.
And, you know, and was it was absolutely at the top of his, you know, at the top of his dominant run as a closer, and so the improbability of rallying against Eckersley was really prominent in this storyline.
Yeah, it really was. I just know that when I was down there watching Kirk and he was twitching and everything else, I think he went out there a little too early. They didn't want the Oakland brass to see that he was available or anything. And he goes up and he's ready to get called. He's stepping up and getting into the on-deck circle, and the fans are going crazy. I mean, I think he was locked in earlier, but I think it just absolutely brought him to the point where he was on a mission right there. And so I'm watching this, and, you know, it took a long time to go through the bat. He was fouling balls off, and then he was taking pitches and hobbling up the line. And I just, something came over me at the time. It was kind of like a supernatural type thing. And my hair stood up on my arm, and I just see a ball. I imagine a ball going out to right field and landing in the stands. And the crazy thing about it is, you talk about goosebumps, is when he connected and that ball took the same flight that I saw and hit exactly the same spot that I was looking at. And people think I'm crazy, but it's something that I brought up later after telling the story many years ago. But it's like, that's what actually happened.
Unbelievable. And, you know, also involved in the whole scheme of things was Mike Davis stealing second, which kind of changed the scenario. I mean, really, at that point, all Gibson probably has to do is get a ball out of the infield, and Davis is going to tie it up. But instead, we get this. Here's Vin Scully. That part of Scully's call is the you know, the gotcha line, much like Jack Buck's. We'll hear Jack Buck's call at the end when we finish. But just an unbelievable and including, and one of the funny things, Mitch, that you had a nickname for Gibson's double clutch pump.
Oh yeah, it's the same thing that. You know, remember Bernie Nichols that played for the Kings back when?
Sure, of course.
Back in the 80s and stuff. Well, Bernie did this thing. He did the same kind of thing, so we called it the Pumper Nickel.
It
was called the Pumper Nickel.
And it's funny that you bring up a hockey celebration, because in fact, that is, you know, guys will go down to one knee after a slap shot or a score, and right. And they pump a couple of times with their right or left hand, depending, you know, if they're right-handed or left-handed. I can absolutely envision that. And yeah. Jay Privman is appreciating a Go Kings Go reference.
That's cool. Love the Kings.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that was the real Kings with the purple and yellow before this awful black and white.
Mark
just
Delphi
awful.
And,
yeah. You bet. Well, Mitch, from that point on, obviously they go on and you win. They didn't sweep. The Reds swept them. Any time that La Russa gets beat, I celebrate. Part, right? Four games to one.
Right. It was four games to one. It was the fifth game in Oakland. I happened to be sitting myself on the top step of the dugout there and had my back leaning against some foam padding, and I found myself that we need one out. That's all we need is one out. I couldn't believe it's like you forgot everything in between. And that's, you know, I remember the day before Mark McGuire hit a laser home run off of Jay Howell on. They had a walk-off home run, but Jay took care of it after that.
Well, and the aftermath, talk about the aftermath of the home run, too, because you essentially became part of the story, and Gibson deferred a lot of media toward you.
Yeah, it's funny, but, you know, Ben Hines, the same coach that we're talking about, the hitting coach, everybody crowded around him, and they asked him about the home run, and he goes, "I don't know. Ask Mitch," and he pointed in my direction. And so I ended up, we were going down, you know, the area that I was telling you about that we were working in. There's like a mirror, and you can watch yourself swing and make adjustments and whatever. And I got backed up against that mirror, and there's probably 15 reporters there, and it was kind of crazy. It was real surreal, just like the home run was. But
how did USA Today seek you out for that story yesterday?
God, I had Bob Nightingale actually called me. He sent me a text and said he wanted to talk, and he wanted to talk about horses and stuff. I don't think anything about horses even got in there.
No.
But that's how that happened. And it's crazy, but ESPN did a radio piece with me yesterday.
Fun.
But it's kind of weird because, I mean, we've got all this time on our hands now with this pandemic, and it's like this has all come back again, and it's kind of amazing. But it's like baseball without baseball.
Well, and that's really been true, I think, of, you know, of a lot of team sport conversation and highlights. They're, you know, different networks are playing historic games and greatest games ever. And so, you know, it's occupying people's minds, and it brings back, you know, wonderful, mostly wonderful memories for people. Obviously, there's invariably somebody, you know, there's fans and players and organizations on the losing end of a lot of these moments. You actually, and not to bring up, you know, a lot of futility since that moment, but yeah. 35 years with the team, and I mean, the Dodgers have come close. There's been big expectations. You know, you now actually are the visiting clubhouse manager, and take care of the visitors. You know, talk about your. I mean, did you ever expect to keep to stay with them and basically end up, you know, having a lifelong career with the Dodgers?
Well, I basically saw myself on the home side, you know, but at one point I thought, you know, it wouldn't be so bad moving over there. It'd give me more chance to be with my family, and I'm not traveling every game. And so it is pretty cool being over there, because you meet a lot of different people that you never would have thought of. You also change your opinions about people, of what you thought about them, and then meeting them and talking to them and going, my gosh, this guy's a great guy. You know, I don't want to tell that to the Dodger players or anything, but you know, it's like you form relationships with people outside of your organization. And it's great. In fact, Tony La Russa, you know, you're talking about, you always want to beat him. Well, I had my chance to be around him, and I had all these feelings about him, because when he was with the St. Louis Cardinals, you know, they kind of gave it to us over the last decade or so, and knocking us out, you know, in the NLCS. And but he was with the Boston Red Sox when they were playing us in the World Series. He was an executive with them. And he called me by name. He knew who I was. He said, hey, Mitch, you know, this celebration's great, but I've got to get out of here. I don't want anybody to see me leave. And so, you know, the Red Sox had won that night. And he, I go, yeah, I'll show you how to get out of here. So he handed me a $100 bill. And then he said, you know, can you show me where to go? And I go, yeah. So let's go. So I followed him on up, but then he goes, you know what? I think I can get there, whatever, from here. I know what I'm doing now. And I go, as he turned around to walk off, I go, you know what? I'm going to ask you this. I go, how all these years you guys were kicking our rear, you know? We just couldn't seem to get around you guys. And he walked back to me and he pointed right in my face. He goes, 1988, Mitch. 1988. So that, I totally respect that guy, you know?
Interesting. I've told this story a couple of times. When the Cardinals came to Montreal, I lived in Montreal in the 90s. And I became a big Expo fan. And, of course, Montreal was cheated terribly. The franchise was stolen out from under them. And there was a pitcher that I had on my fantasy team, Cliff Polite. And it was the third game of a series, and La Russa puts a team on the field of all the backups at the end of a series, and here's a rookie pitcher making like his second or third career start. It was in April, and the series of errors, I think, in the second inning, and you know, he gives up some runs, and then he gives him the hook, and it was hardly his fault. And, you know, there wasn't a big crowd, but I'm sitting like in the third row, and I opened up on La Russa as he came back to the dugout and said, that's the team you put out there for a rookie pitcher. You put out the end of the dugout, you put out there to support this kid. And he started to motherfuck me, and it was hysterical. And people, I think, got a big kick out of it. My buddy Dave Kaufman wasn't, Dave was, I think, a little embarrassed. And I forget who it is. And was Oil Can Boyd with them at some point in his career?
I remember him with the Red Sox. I don't really remember him.
I think he. Somebody put their head out of the dugout and said, "Who yelling at Skip? Who's yelling at the Skip?" La Russa, I find it very easy to root against La Russa. Let's talk about your association with the game too, and how did you get involved with Fast Pharaoh? How many horses, Mitch, have you been involved with?
Quite a few. I got affiliated. You probably know this group is called My Racehorse.
Yeah, of course.
And it's an easier way to get in because they're micro shares. It's easy to get into something like this without killing yourself. So, but I did. I got into a horse named Takeo Squared, which is a Square Eddie horse, and. A little bit down the line, I ended up getting his brother Squared Straight, and he's exactly the same lineage as Takeo. Takeo ended up breaking his leg at some point, but it was a lateral break, so he ended up being fine. Didn't race again, but he was on his way. He was quite a horse. So then, this last year, before the Kentucky Oaks, I was offered a chance to get into Street Band.
Sure.
And she ended up qualifying for that race. And so my family and I, we all went out there and just checked out the whole scene. It was incredible. It was an incredible time. And but I forgot to tell you that the reason I got into My Racehorse was because my daughter was at a booth, and I kind of went, I don't think so. But we went home. She goes online, and she shows me this, and I kind of, my wife gave me the eye. And then we just did it. We got into one horse and then got into a horse called Zestful that got claimed later on down the line and ended up winning all kinds of races after that. But we, going back to Street Band, she won the Cotillion last year,
mm-hmm.
In Philadelphia in front of a bunch of Colorado Rockies players that were in my locker room. and they're cheering her on, and it was on NBC, and the Dodger players knew about it too, but it was like crazy because she came out of the gate eighth, and she stayed there for so long, and Sophie Doyle actually brought her down the outside, ends up winning the thing, and my gosh, guys were going crazy in the locker room. I kind of left because I left the locker room because I thought, oh my gosh, we're in eighth, and she's staying there. We're not going to do anything. And then you see this horse has got so much mud on her, you can't even tell who she is, but it was her. And she ended up pulling that thing out and winning. And then another horse that I have, his name is Fast Pharaoh.
Yeah.
And he's an American Pharaoh product. And he's kind of on the rack right now, but he's looking super good. I went and saw him last week, and he looks like he's ready to go. And him, and then another one named Tiz a Magician. I don't know if you've ever heard of him.
We just of course. How did you get involved with Tiz a Magician?
Tiz a Magician happened to be my racehorse product. So
okay,
but I didn't, I ended up getting in with him.
Wow, he's, listen, there's a lot to like.
Yeah, Mandela, I'll tell you, he's quite the professional. So I have a couple of horses and Mandela's involved with. And, but that's all my racehorse.
That's tremendous.
The one horse that I have that I own, you know, outright piece of him is Fast Pharaoh.
Well, and I've got a little bit of a tie-in only because I was at Los Al when Baffert won those five straight, including the Futurity. And
I was there too.
Were you there? Who was it? And I'm not sure among the owners, but I sort of recognized one of them, and I don't know if it was Tom Manser or. Or Daryl?
Yeah.
I thought it was Tom, and we walked out together, and I said to him, I said, this horse just keeps running into nice horses, and you know, that included it, in his debut, he got beat by 8 rings at Del Mar.
Right. He's a barrel chested horse, but I'll tell you, he's not that big, but he's quick. And, I mean, the word fast, Tom named him, and he named him P-H-A-S-T, you know, instead of
Yeah, F-A-S-T. Like Pharaoh.
Yeah, and he's the most gentle horse you've ever met, but he means business when he goes out there, and he wants to do it. I could tell this dealing with him the other day. He wants to get out there so bad, and... never seen a carrot eater like this guy. He eats more carrots than any horse I've ever seen.
Is he? And I know he's on the shelf after the maiden win, and you know, he turf sprinted with Rosario to break the maiden, and did it at even money, and really looked good. And Jeff had him on the turf, you know, for several of his starts. The two dirt starts, he ran into Baffert, you know, the two good Baffert horses in 8 rings, and then Ra'ad. But how far away is he from, you know, from being able to resume training?
I think probably a couple months.
Okay.
I think this whole thing that we're facing right now, going through, has kind of been a good thing for him. I think he's going to come back super strong. And a lot of people have told me the same. And they said, don't worry about that horse, you know. So I'm fairly confident. He's got great lineage, and I really look forward to seeing him run and hopefully being in that winner's circle with him.
Getting a picture would be you weren't around for, you missed the win, the maiden breaker?
I was there.
Oh, yeah. good.
In fact,
all right,
that week was a great week for us because Tiz a Magician won his maiden that week also. Like 4 days in between each other. I believe they said that it was American Pharaoh's his offspring's first win of the year was Fast Pharaoh.
Nice. Well,
so 2020, that is.
Well, he certainly, he was $175,000 purchase, and as a June 2 year old, and he certainly, as you said, bred wise, American Pharaoh out of the Warfront Mare, loudly, China Horse Club actually bred Fast Pharaoh, and you're in good hands with Jeff Bondi and turf sprinter like this. And hopefully, you know what, hopefully down the road they reopen the downhill turf course. That might suit him quite well, as you know, as well. But well, this is a lot of fun. Mitch, I know that a lot of your staff and some of the people that you work with, you know, it's funny, you mentioned La Russa tipping you 100, you know, a lot of the attendance, the clubhouse attendance and everybody else, Dodger Stadium and the Dodger staff. I mean, everybody basically on furlough right now. And, you know, how are you getting by? How is everybody making out?
I'm getting by because, I'm still being paid by the Dodgers right now. I'm a nice. Full-time employee,
right.
And that may stop if we don't get things going pretty soon. But my staff was paid by the Dodgers all the way up to last week, so I commend them for taking care of those guys. You know, you can only do that for so long also. And I have a couple guys that have jobs already, and they've actually been doing their job even through last season, the year before. So I'm not real worried about them. There's a couple guys that don't, that it'd be nice to try to find some way to generate money. But, you know, jobs are few and far between. I mean, it's like you can always find something. It's just how bad do you want to get into it, you know?
Yeah.
And I think the biggest thing with people is how long will I have to be doing this and before our other job kicks in and stuff. And sometimes you can't worry about that. You just have to go for it.
Well, Mitch, the last question, we played the Vin Scully cut. We're going to listen to the Jack Buck call going out. Which do you prefer?
Well, I'm biased because
Vin, yeah.
Vinny, I love Vinny, you know. Vinny, there's nobody like him. There's nobody like Jack Buck either. But Vinny, I've known him for 30, 35 years.
Sure.
And towards the end of his broadcasting career, when I was traveling, our traveling secretary from before, Billy DeLurie, kind of took ill, and his spot on the airplane was right next to Vin Scully. And you know who got to sit next to Vin Scully when Mr. DeLurie had left was me. And I'd always, well, we've gone to dinner before and stuff like that, but I never really got a chance to talk to him as long as I did on some of those flights. And Vinny, he pretty much stopped flying anywhere at the end of his career. But there was some times that during the last few years that I actually got to sit and talk to him about everything, you know, not just baseball, but his boyhood preference of the New York Giants, I guess, over the Dodgers. He was a big Giant fan. And but you know, he's such a professional that you look beyond all that, that's for sure.
Well, you also now are prompting me to ask a question. Who's your favorite player that you got closest to over these 35 years?
You know, It's crazy, but I asked that question of one of the New York Yankees clubhouse managers because I was wondering if he had the same answer that I did. I go, Robin Ventura.
Huh.
And he goes, that's what he told me. And I go, that's exactly what I was going to tell you. So the guy was super to us. He had barbecues from the Santa Maria style barbecue type stuff. He'd have a crew drive up to our parking lot and, they'd cook during the game. Everybody could smell it billowing over the top of the stadium down under the people. But he, such an incredible guy. He's from the Santa Maria area. My parents live up that way in Napomo, California. But I got to actually coach high school baseball at Arroyo Grande High School, and later on his kids ended up going there. And while he was helping out there is when he got the call from the White Sox to be manager of the White Sox. So, but anyway, to make a long story short, which I didn't, it'd be Robin Ventura.
That's a great answer. And of course, he spent the last couple of years of his career with the Dodgers. Yeah.
Yeah. Just like another guy that people don't realize. What was the team that Ricky Henderson had his last game with?
Did he end up with the Dodgers?
He was with the Dodgers. Yeah.
At the end, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. This is kind of the favorite era, and I'm just looking at numbers. I mean, just a tremendous career, tremendous career.
He did.
Unbelievable.
He could have had a lot better career, but he had a compound fracture of his ankle, sliding it into home. I think it was in spring training with the White Sox way back, and ended up having to have a replacement of his ankle with a cadaver ankle. And it took perfect. Yeah, the guy, after his career was over. But he's such a stud. He's just a guy that, that would be my choice.
And that's a good choice. That's a great choice.
It's fantastic that he happened to play for the Dodgers for a little while. So.
I love it. Well, Mitch, I'd spend a lot of time during the year, come out to Santa Anita as often as I can. And, I'm out there in December, then usually twice during the winter season. But look forward to meeting you down the road. And I thought this was irresistible to talk to you about 1988 and your involvement with the game and continued success in everything. And even if we end up, watching games from Arizona without spectators, it'll be better than nothing, which is what we've got right now.
Very true. Very true.
Well, and as we wrap up, Mitch Poole, everybody, the Los Angeles Dodgers and 35-year association, and it was near the beginning of his career when he was instrumental in getting Kirk Gibson out on the field. And as we leave, let's listen to the other call of Gibson's home run, the national radio broadcast with Jack Buck. It was Vin on the radio in and around Los Angeles. Jack Buck, here it is.
Gibson swings and a fly ball to deep right field. This is going to be a home run. Unbelievable! A home run for Gibson. And the Dodgers have won the game 5-4. I don't believe what I just saw. I don't believe what I just saw.
There it is.
I love it, Kirk.
It's so great. And every time you see it, it provokes the same. And Gibson hobbling around the bases, and Lasorda waddling out there with his arms in the air. It's a pretty indelible moment, and the kind of thing that, that's one of the reasons, Mitch, I think we all love racing, because either as a bettor or as an owner, because, or even as a fan, because you can be a part of that kind of a moment. And even if it's from, you know, 2,000 miles away, you know, watching a Derby win, you're part of it in one shape or another. But for you, I mean, to be there and to be, you know, part of the story, it's just amazing. And you've gone on, obviously, to plenty more, and there will be a Dodger championship to celebrate again soon, undoubtedly.
I believe so.
I love it. Mitch Poole, everybody. Mitch, do you have a social media presence? You on Twitter?
No, I'm not. I stay out of that because of my job.
Yeah, you're smart. You're smart.
I kind of try to, you know, I don't want to say the wrong thing.
Be very clever. That's probably the right attitude. Mitch, we'll see you at Santa Anita or at Chavez Ravine, but thanks so much for this.
Well, thank you. Great talking to you.
Really fun. Mitch Poole, everybody, from the Dodgers, and he's got My Racehorse shares, and in with the big group that is part of Fast Pharaoh, and look forward to him coming back for Bondi. Let's take a break. Coming up at the top of the hour, and still haven't heard. I haven't gotten a confirmation from Victor Martinez, so maybe we'll save the rest of the baseball talk. We do have to get to Scott Young and Seth Merrow and Steve Haskins, so we got a lot to do in this last hour. Stay with us at the races.
It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Developed by Horsemen, Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, environment-friendly, paperless revolution of how equine industries bill and receive payments. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for each horse, whose owners can pay through the same website with just one click. Say goodbye to stacks of invoices, handwritten checks, and postage costs. Easy accounting for all parties with the highest online security measures. Get started free at Horsebills.com. Simply register with your name and email address. Free to sign up. No subscription fees to vendors until the first invoice is sent. For owners, you get a free account, comprehensive dashboard with information on all horses owned and billing records, ACH and credit card payment options. For vendors, generate invoices efficiently and receive payments quickly from both owners and other vendors. Syndicate and partnership managers get flexible billing and payment options to both vendors and syndicate members. For more info, call 888-938-4643, 888-938-4643, or log on to horsebills.com. That's horsebills.com.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the 5 Kentucky Tracks for Horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
DRF Sports Form Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Form delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Have you heard about the new handicapping and betting app that is sweeping the nation? It's called First Bet, and it puts the power of AI-assisted handicapping, seamless wagering, and live HD video in the palm of your hand. Thousands of bettors have already made First Bet their way to handicap, bet, and watch more than 300 of the world's top tracks. Isn't it time for you to join them? And when you give First Bet a try today, you can cash in on a huge welcome bonus. Sign up with promo code SPORTOFKINGS, all one word, and you will get $10 just for joining, as well as a 10% rebate, up to $500 for your first 30 days. With that much free cash on the line, what do you have to lose? Get started at first.com/bet. That's number1st.com/bet. And don't forget promo code SPORTOFKINGS when you sign up. And if you already have an ExpressBet account, you're way ahead of the game. Simply log into FirstBet using your username and password, and you're off to the races.
Up to 18 years old or 21 years old in certain states to open an account with FirstBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing, this is At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
I can't stop shaking. The room has a groove and the floor is almost earthquaking. Look what we're making. History out on the floor and it's just awaking. So get that needle in the core, scratch that back and give me more. You know exactly what I came here for. Back it up and do it again. From the middle to the top to the end.
We're back at the races to the strains of Chanteuse Caro Emerald, who is, I believe, Scottish or Welsh, because there's also Imelda May. Now, Imelda May, I think she's, it's hard to tell, Irish, Scotch, Welsh. Imelda May, very much same kind of stylings, actually, as Caro Emerald. I love that sound. And